Viagra, is it possible that we could use this to cure coronavirus? We've got a bunch of listener questions. Somebody asks about Rich Piana's mass cycle. He did something where he says he put on like 1,000 pounds in 30 days. I can't remember exactly, but we'll get to that. Plus, we have a bunch more stuff, guys. It's all going to happen right now on Drugs and Stuff. Welcome back to Drugs and Stuff with Dave Crossland. I'm Scott McNally. Our programming is brought to you by TrueNutrition.com. Guys, if you if you're watching this on YouTube, if you want to listen to it on audio podcast, search out Advices Radio, the Advices Radio Network. You can go to AdvicesRadio.com or your favorite podcast app. You can hang out with Dave Crossland and I, along with everybody else, on Think Big. What's up, Dave? How you doing, man?
Not bad. Lockdown day 174 or whatever it is. I don't fucking know. I've done my daily exercise.
Yeah?
The dog did it with me, and now the dog is dead on the floor in front of the back door.
Yeah, he's done for the day.
Yeah, that's it. He's like me. He's not built for long distance. That's why I got him, because he's a fat, lazy git just like me. No, it's all right, mate. Just take it a day at a time. A bit frustrated, a bit fed up. But, you know, no more than anyone else, and things could be a hell of a lot worse.
All right. We've got questions from a different source today, Dave. We have questions from the YouTube page. We released the latest show. Mm-hmm. We have a ton of questions there. But before we do, it's been difficult to find anything in the news unrelated to this whole pandemic that's going on. But Dave, I've got some steroids. We'll say drugs in the news.
No.
You what?
What's going on?
What's going on? Well, we've got a few things.
What's happening in the news? Well, that's what I'm meaning. What's this big thing you're on about in the news? What's going on?
We're not gonna talk about it. I said the pandemic that's happening, but there is information. I see that there's a trial that's happening right now. They're saying that nitric oxide, which, you know, obviously in bodybuilding we pay a lot of attention to nitric oxide, helps us to get better pumps. It may be beneficial in fighting the virus. So they're looking at Viagra, discovering that treatment may help to increase oxygen in people that are suffering from low oxygen due to COVID.
Somebody sent me something the other day about NAC as well.
Yeah.
I don't really know, if I'm honest. Regards to prevention.
Yeah.
I don't think you can do better than vitamin C.
Yeah. But this isn't prevention. This is for people that are struggling with it. They say...
Obviously, anything that's going to increase your capability of carrying oxygen around your body and making your lungs more efficient is going to be beneficial, because it's an upper respiratory disease, so it attacks your ability to breathe.
Right.
My understanding, and somebody will shoot me down if this is incorrect, I'll be honest, I haven't really looked at the virus. I don't really have much interest in looking at the virus. In fact, I'm sick of fucking hearing about the virus. It's here. I appreciate that. It's costing people their lives. It is very, very serious. But and see. I was chatting to my brother, who's a paramedic, and he was saying that his understanding is it's not the virus that causes fatalities. It's pneumonia that causes fatalities, and the pneumonia is brought on by the virus.
Okay.
And so technically it's not the virus that kills, it's the pneumonia that kills. But yeah, I mean, anything that's going to increase your ability to breathe is going to be beneficial if you're suffering with an upper respiratory disease.
Yeah, so what they're doing, though, is they're testing nitric oxide itself. They have a trial. It says, so for about 30 minutes, two or three times a day, study participants assigned to the trial's active arm will inhale a high dose of nitric oxide through a mask. And then there's a control group that doesn't go with the gas. So they're going to see if that helps.
You know, at this stage, I think it's a case of just throwing anything and everything you can at it and seeing what sticks, isn't it?
They're like, hey, let's see if Viagra will do anything.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen I've seen some impressive studies on IV in sort of 25 grams of vitamin C and doses of that level.
Yeah.
That have shown to be quite effective. But it depends who you speak to. I mean, the problem is, for most of us, our resource for information on the virus is generally a social media platform.
Mm.
And you just can't trust the 90% of the sources that are shared and posted on that platform.
Oh, yeah.
A video a friend of mine sent it, and it was a woman in the States, actually, who was supposedly a nurse, telling everybody that COVID-19 wasn't real and people weren't dying and people weren't ill from it.
Yeah.
And this was a nurse with a set of AirPods sticking out of her ears, a hairnet on, but her hair was down to her waist and not under the neck. And it's just like, oh, come on, you know?
Yeah.
And then there's some other video floating around at the moment that a virus is a solvent. It's not a disease. You can't catch it from another person. And the guy that starts this video starts telling you about why he should be listened to, because he's a practitioner. You know that age-old word that qualified?
Yeah.
Yes, I'm a practitioner. And he says, I studied for X amount of years, but names no qualifications, name no college of study, no university of study or anything. And then people are believing this shit.
Dave, you're getting real heavy on me here. You all right?
I'm frustrated.
I can tell.
Moron that is currently inhabiting the fucking ether.
I want to talk about Viagra. There are so many jokes that we could be making right now, but instead, we've gone down a rabbit hole about disinformation. About disinformation, about all the terrible things that are going on in the world.
Well, I suppose at the moment, any study involving Viagra and any home experience or experiments involving Viagra, it's going to be beneficial to passing the time anyway.
There you go. I like that. Actually, I'm going to give you, let's see, I think I have, there we go. We've got a...
Dude, talking about that, actually, in all seriousness, do you think...
I had a soundbite to add in there. People applauding for you for that joke.
Do you think that in 9 months' time, we're going to see a lot of babies?
I think so. I definitely think so.
And do you think by the time of the lockdown, we're going to see lots of bodybuilders with arm imbalances?
Only, you know, I feel bad for anybody who's contest prepping right now, who has been like on a really, they're hitting a hard cycle, and now all of a sudden they're stuck by themselves at home without the girlfriend. I mean, that could be just terrible, really, seriously.
Yeah, how have you got calluses on your hands when you're only doing tension band work at home?
Oh, man. But seriously, I feel like they found Viagra to do all sorts of stuff. It wasn't originally invented for like sexual performance, was it?
No. And I mean, it's shown to be very, you know, very useful in heart health and blood movement around the body, for want of a better word. So, yeah, it's a drug that's sort of relatively simple in its action, but as a result of that, has a lot of uses into a lot of different things.
Yeah.
You know, so, and obviously when you're trying to combat something that affects the way you breathe, then the key thing you're looking at is improving your ability to breathe or improving your ability to flow oxygen around the body.
Yeah.
And so either increasing lung efficiency or increasing oxygen transportation efficiency. I mean, you could argue very, very vaguely that oxys and EQ would be good to take if you were full of COVID, because you'd have a higher number of red blood cells and therefore you'd transport oxygen more efficiently.
Ooh, I like that. You know what else would be a good idea?
Recommend that before any fucking tries it, by the way. Just be deliberately awkward.
Let's get everybody on Clen too. I think that'd be a good idea. You know? Right? Hey?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We could start marketing Clen as the new cure
for COVID-19.
Yeah, clenbuterol. I think that's a good
shotgun's
idea.
Shotgun's a good cure for it.
Hey, now, come on now. You're going dark on me again. Whew, Dave, you're going real dark. Your British humor is taking over. I'm going to switch topics then. We've got another story here in the news. Guys, continuing with more steroids in the news. Tokyo Olympics being moved to 2021. There's nothing that WADA can do about this. More than 200 track and field athletes alone will see their bans expire before May next year, meaning that they will be eligible to compete in this showpiece event.
Can you just imagine some WADA official sitting there and working the numbers and it dawning on him that all these cheats that they hate are actually going to be eligible to compete in the biggest competition in the world, and him just sit there going, no!
What's really funny is they have, let's see, they have an image of this guy who was banned for 4 years in 2016 for using steroids, and he's sitting there in his track outfit. This is the cover image. He's got the biggest smile on his face, and I'm telling you, in context, it looks like he's like totally being like, yeah, fuck off, guys. I'm going to do what I want. I'm on trend right now. Right now.
It is, though. I mean, you could just imagine them when they actually sit there and it dawns on them what's happened.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's just like, no.
They're all there. Dude, we might see some serious, you know, you talked about, you know, what are some positive outcomes. We might see a lot more babies. And we might see some new world records in Tokyo this year, this next year.
All the gearheads are back.
Yes, exactly. Gosh, just all these guys, they worked so hard this year. They've outperformed everybody. Totally jacked.
Do
you remember what Ben Johnson looked like when he competed?
I do, yes.
Dude, he looked like he was ready to step. Yeah, he looked like he was ready to step on like a classic physique stage or something.
It could have done, couldn't it?
Yeah.
I just wonder, as an athlete preparing for the Olympic Games, does this delay actually, is it better for you or is it worse for you?
Hey, ask the same question about bodybuilding. I mean, I had clients that were scheduled to compete, you know, in the next few weeks. And for some of them, they were, as you would say, Dave, spot on. Some of them could have used a little bit more time. And I guess it depends on who you are, would be my thought.
But at the same time, if they do hold condition, or at least stay close, they're going to come in even tighter when the bands start lifting and the world starts moving again.
True, true. I feel like you could relate to this, Dave. I feel like when I've made a goal, like I decide I'm going to get in shape, for me, it's like there's no going back. Like, I don't care what happens. I'm just going to continue on with that goal. Nothing's going to get in my way, you know?
Excuse me. Oh, bloody hell. Yeah, no, I mean, I can see because you have that sort of mindset, that sort of on-off mindset, and it's on, so it has to be done.
Yeah, it's like it's too late. Decision's been made, you know?
Have you had a lot of problems with federations in the States not returning show subsidies and stuff like that if they've canceled shows?
Well, most of our shows were coming up here in the next, I think in the next month. So I'm not sure. I'll have to talk with people and see, because I haven't heard yet. We weren't like in the middle of the season. Do you guys, we usually kind of, the season kind of is off from like after Christmas in Michigan, at least, through like January, February, and then into March, the season starts back up. So we were just now getting back into contests again. I haven't talked to anybody specifically about having lost money, but what's the situation over there?
Well, most of the feds, I believe, have been in returning, you know, show fees, or at least being very supportive of the athletes. But the two bros has come under a lot of criticism. And bear in mind, they're a very expensive show to enter as well. I mean, I think they charge £300.
Okay.
And apparently they've refused to refund anything. Mm. But what was worse, their show that actually it may have been last weekend, it should have been, or this weekend it should have been, up until literally 2-3 weeks before the show, even though everybody else, every Fed in the country have cancelled the shows, they kept saying theirs was going to go ahead.
Ooh.
And they were allowing people to still, because obviously what was happening then, guys that wanted to compete, that were due to compete in the Fed, were switching across and paying entry fees.
Yeah, last minute, right?
Literally last minute, and then they turned around and said nope, and then they turned around and said that they had COVID-19 and they weren't responding because they were in isolation for 14 days.
So this is two bros. This is who runs that?
I haven't got a clue.
Okay. I think I know who one of the people are, but I don't want to say any names in case.
No, I won't want to get it wrong either. But there's been a lot. I mean, there's been a lot of bad blood over how they've conducted themselves. Definitely. How justified that is in the big picture with what other federations are doing, I don't know.
Yeah.
But there's definitely been a lot of bad blood, particularly about the fact that they were still taking entry fees when everybody else had said we're not competing. Yeah. And it was quite obvious to anyone with half a brain cell that they weren't going to be able to go ahead.
Mm. That's a shame, man.
Yeah, it's shit like that doesn't do the sport any good, isn't it, unfortunately?
Yeah. We had a question. I'm going to see if I can find it. I was just reminded about it. Have you heard of Rich Piana's cycles that he had posted? Because there's one of his cycles were posted on the advices board. I know you met Rich once, didn't you?
Yeah, we online email. And then I only met him the once, but didn't really get much of a conversation the day I met him. I mean, he was at Body Power. He was busy as well.
Okay.
And then communication sort of died off after that.
Okay. Yeah, I have, you know, I have what looks like his cycle here. I can.
Was this the question about Bigger by the Day?
Is that what it is? It says, Scott McNally, can y'all discuss the late Rich Piana's 30 pounds in 3 months.
Bigger by the Day.
That's it? Yeah. So here, I'm going to.
I don't want to speak ill of Rich. I like the guy. I actually genuinely like the guy. I know he had a lot of demons, but I don't think he was particularly a bad person.
Okay.
In any way, shape, or form. You can criticize things he did and things he said, but people can say that of me. So, you know, let's not even go there. But the Bigger by the Day was probably one of his best PR moves he ever did.
Really? But what is this exactly?
Well, basically what he did was he dieted, lost a load of weight, and then claimed he was going to do a live. Basically, he was going to do his version of me.
Oh, okay.
Okay. But in his way, different way, he was doing it daily on podcast type setup, vlog, sorry, or whatever you want to call it. And so he was doing his updates and he was tracking his weight and showing his cycle and showing his food and showing his training to gain 30 pounds in 30 days.
I'm looking at some of these doses and it doesn't look crazy.
It wasn't particularly crazy, but the trick weight in the first place.
Wait, you broke up a second.
Back on.
What did you say you broke up for a second there?
It said he dropped the weight in the first place to just quite literally put it back on. There wasn't a massive amount of new tissue growth at all in that project, if any.
Okay.
And when you get towards the back end, you can see he's starting to struggle because he's starting to actually have to push for new tissue.
Okay.
Amazing marketing thing. But if you track what he was doing beforehand, you'll notice that he dropped a shitload of weight beforehand.
Mm.
And then literally just bounce back on the Bigger by the Day. But as a piece of marketing, as a piece of exposure, as a piece of, I mean, the viewing figures off that project were insane.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was a million view sort of territory. It was insane the feedback he got off that and the engagement he got off that. It was a stroke of marketing genius. Absolutely. But the Rich Piana at the end of that was no bigger than the Rich Piana of 12 months before.
No kidding.
There was very little overall mass gain in what Rich had been at his biggest.
Yeah.
But you can't, you know, it was a stroke of genius in what he did and how he worked it to his advantage and how he used it to promote himself. An absolute stroke of genius.
Hmm. Yeah, as funny as it sounds, man, I didn't hear anything about this. I didn't pay attention, I guess.
Yeah, you find out what you see, don't you? At the end of the day, I mean, you know, if you're not made aware of something, you're just not going to know about it. It's as simple as that.
What's the George White says? Sounds like Casey Viardor, Arthur Jones experiment. He said Casey had put on 67 pounds but almost all regained tissue. That was, I forget what that was called. There was a name for that. It was the something experiment, or I can't remember. I bet George knows.
Wasn't that the big hit thing?
It was, yeah, and I think it had to do with Nautilus, because Arthur Jones was involved.
Yeah.
So they did it in Colorado.
I always remember seeing a picture of him riding a push bike.
Who's that, Arthur Jones?
No, Casey.
Casey Vidor. They had a great picture of Casey at Highland Park Powerhouse. He was really good for being able to hit a non-pose, just kind of like a standing there pose, you know, just kind of like a little forearm flex. Yeah. George says correct. It was hit. George, what was the name of that? The Colorado experiment, maybe something like that. I can't remember. But so it was regained tissue that we saw on
Rich. To a large extent, yes. Okay. To a large extent. Now, I think there may have been a bit of new tissue growth towards the end, but the vast majority of it was regained.
Well, here's the reality: we see so many posts, especially nowadays, man, of people saying, "Hey, I gained 30 pounds in 30 days, and it was all muscle." I mean, I feel like that kind of headline is grabbing for somebody who's new, but for somebody who's been around for a while, man, the reality is it's going to be really tough to gain 30 pounds of muscle in 30 days, for instance, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you can gain muscle fast even if you've been at it a long time, but it is definitely no easy experience.
Yeah.
And you have to be 110% focused and dedicated to what you're doing. There's no slip-ups trying to do something like that. But, we've seen pros disappear and come back significantly bigger.
I could see guys with great genetics making really good progress, say, you know, in an off-season, 16 weeks. But
then genetics isn't just about muscle response, is it? Genetics might be about an ability to train hard, so mental strength. Genetics might be a drug response. Genetics might be food response.
Digestion, you know, absolutely. Yes,
there's so many different elements to genetics. You know, you do get some people, Sean Joseph Tavernier, UK pro, who won Rookie of the Year, fucking hell, what, 6-7 years ago now? Maybe longer. He could grow off eating fucking McDonald's and playing with bands, you know what I mean? He's just built to be a bodybuilder.
I got a question for you. The mental fortitude that it takes, you said that you can gain a lot in 30 days, right? But you have to be 100% in everything. The mental fortitude that it takes to push the amount of food that it would require, to do the training that it would require, all that aspect of it from a psychological side standpoint, is that genetic as well, do you think?
Yeah, I think it is, because I think you have that mental strength or you don't. Can you improve your mental ability? Of course you can. And a big driver behind mental ability is desire. The stronger you desire something, the stronger your mental aptitude is going to be about achieving that. I've worked with people that are literally robots. You know, you could say stand on one foot and lick a nettle leaf at 2 minutes past 3 o'clock in the morning, and they would do it. You know what I mean? If you told them that was going to make them grow, they would do it. And I suppose a good example of mental fortitude is Jordan Peters.
Absolutely.
You know, Jordan's, whether you agree with where he's gone with his physique and whether you agree with how he's gone with his physique is irrelevant. You cannot knock the guy's mental dedication to what he does.
You know what I find interesting? You say whether you agree or not. People feel really challenged by somebody who gains a lot of muscle and a lot of size. You notice that?
This is the other thing, isn't it? If someone can do it and you can't, then you tend to reflect on that as a failing in yourself.
Yeah.
And you can just look at it that, yeah, that person's better at that than me, but, you know, everybody has their strengths and weaknesses.
Yeah.
We all have talents doing certain things, and not just talents in the sense of, you know, I can play a musical instrument, or I can sing, or I can draw, or something like that. But the talent may be working under stress. Talent may be being able to function with not a lot of sleep. And vice versa, you know, so we all have our little things that we can do and do well. But people do, instead of celebrating, and this is, I think, is one of the big things that's wrong with society today, instead of celebrating other people's successes and enjoying it with them, what we tend to do is criticize and devalue their successes, because it then means that we don't have to reflect on our own lack of success.
I think you're right.
We'd be much better in celebrating their successes and using those people as inspirations to improve our own achievements.
Yeah, I think you're right, man. And I've seen this. I've seen it with guys like, are you familiar with Nick Walker?
Know the name, can't think why.
He's an incredible bodybuilder. He's a pretty young guy. I'm going to put a picture up here for the viewing audience. This dude is a freak. Like, you look at him and you're like, holy shit, this guy should be pro, you know? I mean, he looks fantastic. And Ron and Dusty interviewed this dude. There were so many people that were like, oh, yeah, man, that guy's a bag of shit. That guy looks like shit. He's fat ass. Like, no, really, this is like, I don't know. I don't understand why people would say that, you know? Gary Turner gets the same thing. You know, he's a guy who pushed up over 300 pounds, and it took like every ounce in his willpower and his mind to do that. But he deals with like hate all the time, man. It's interesting. You know, when I got back on when I first found the message boards and stuff, I thought to myself, like, wow, this is a fantastic place where we can all come together. We can all share our experiences. We can all build each other up and learn from one another. And then, no, people are posting up their pictures and everybody else is like, oh, you look like you got fucking gyno, you know? You look like shit, man. It's like, it's the opposite.
Yeah, it's an awful place at times, is this industry. A real awful. I mean, I've met some amazing people. But unfortunately, I'm going to be American now. The douchebags far outweigh the good ones.
is that an American thing? Douchebags?
I don't know. That's just as American as I get.
Fair enough.
But they do. They far outweigh the good, positive people in this sport. And it's a shame. It really is. But, you know, I mean, we're not exactly a group of people that are generally known for being self-confident and for being very secure in our image and everything else, hence why we do what we do. So, you know, it's not surprising that you see people feeling threatened by someone who achieves greater physique achievements than they do.
Yeah.
Because part of the driver to us doing all this is insecurities about the way we look in the first place.
You had to build up a pretty thick skin going through the under construction projects.
Very, very difficult to start with. That was something I never actually had ever experienced or even really knew anything about. And it was, James Grealish, who did the filming, James helped me there. He was very much a voice of reason in the background about don't listen to him, don't engage with him. But it did. I mean, I probably had 6 months of genuinely being upset by some of the comments people had made. And you find yourself desperately trying to defend yourself and then realizing that, you know, it wouldn't matter if I posted a picture up of 350 pounds with striated glutes.
Right, right.
That person would still find a reason to criticize.
Yeah.
And so you just start to learn that, you know, the opinions that count are the opinions of people that matter to you.
Yeah.
And if you're going to expose yourself like that, you're going to get shit for it.
Yeah. And the bigger you are, the more attention you bring, the more you're going to find it, right?
And it's not like I was conventional in looking like a bodybuilder. You know, I was very off-season looking, more mass than class without any doubt. And so I didn't really feel, to a lot of people, they had some genuine argument that could I call myself a bodybuilder? And I always said, I don't really call myself a bodybuilder. It's the one label that sort of fits it better than anything else.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I'm just a guy that likes lifting weights, likes challenging himself in the gym, and likes being fucking big. And that was really the sum of it all. But people want labels. People want, and so obviously the what fits, bodybuilder's the closest thing to it. But yeah, I got shit, lots of shit. Some of it quite nasty. Some of it like attacking my kids, attacking my missus, things like that. She probably got more upset than I did. She still struggles with stuff like this now. She doesn't like it. It hurts her a lot. I've learned over the years to just let it go. I mean, I had someone fucking calling me out last week, slagging me off.
Yeah. That was me. Yeah. That was me under a fake name.
It lasted all of about 15 minutes, and then he took the post down because he got a right backlash, which warmed my cockles a little bit, to be fair. But
wait, it did what?
Warmed my cockles a little bit.
Warmed your cockles?
Cockles, yes.
What's a cockle? I mean, I think I know what that is, but...
A cockle is actually a seafood.
Warms my cockles.
That you eat at the seaside, but it, effectively what it means is it gave me a warm feeling inside.
And your balls.
No.
Because that's what
balls.
It sounds like.
I know what it sounds like. But no, it just, you know, it was very warming to see people actually. I mean, I just wasn't going to really react to it. It was just like, whatever.
Yeah.
But a lot of people jumped to my defense, which was nice. It definitely was very, very nice. But you're always going to get people taking pot shots, particularly if they feel threatened by you or intimidated by you. And that doesn't mean physically intimidated. It might mean successfully intimidated or popularly intimidated in that they feel you're more popular than they are or whatever it may be. You're always going to get arseholes in this sport, unfortunately. It just attracts them. But I've sort of found that when you get into anything that's niche and inhabited by enthusiasts, you do get these levels of extreme behavior.
Yeah. Well, hey, before we jump onto another topic, I'm looking directly at that cycle. Here, I'll repost it too for anybody who's watching. So I'm looking at, I mean, this really isn't crazy talk. You know, we're looking at, so it looks like the peak was around, you know, week 11. He's on 3,300 milligrams. It looks like test sip at 300 milligrams Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 200 milligrams of Tren E Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 250 EQ Monday, Wednesday, Friday. 150 Anadrol a day. It looks like he rotated. He had D-ball in earlier, and then he goes to Anadrol later. I mean, that's a lot of Anadrol, I guess. And only, he's at 4.5 units of growth hormone. I imagine it was farm grade. But, I mean, realistically, Dave, that's like – I'm not saying everybody should go out and do that, but that's not crazy, is it?
No, I mean, it's higher end, definitely. But we've seen much more extreme cycles, and there are no doubt there are – well, hang on. To give you some reflection, I had a guy 157 pounds on that amount of gear.
Yeah, okay. How did he grow? How did he do with that?
I've told him to come off. He messaged me saying he was rebounding from a show and he was using that much, and I told him to come off.
Hmm. Ooh, this is interesting. Monday, so he split that Monday, Wednesday, Friday. Then later on, he went to doing each dose all at once. So Monday, he did 900 test sip. Wednesday, he did 600 Tren. Friday, he did 750 EQ. What do you think about that?
I think he got sick of injecting. I feel him there. I think he got sick of injecting.
At your peak, how many cc's were you using a day?
The highest I ran was 5.5 gram, but that wasn't for very long. Wow. I spent the majority at around 3.5.
Okay. Break that down for me. 3.5 grams, like how many cc's would that end up being per week?
Well, that was 3 gram of test, which was 10 cc.
Oh, wow. One full bottle.
Yeah, 10 mil a week.
For some people, that's a whole cycle right there.
Yeah, and that was 1.5 grams of Deca, which would have been 5 cc's.
Okay. So 15 cc's a week. That's a lot. Mm-hmm. That's a lot.
Yeah. But that wasn't for the whole duration of the cycle. That was where it peaked.
Okay. Okay.
So it was staged. I upped it in stages. Mm.
Hey, what's up, guys? I'm going to cut in here really quick to knock out a quick ad for our sponsor, True Nutrition. Basically, I just want to shout them out and to remind you guys that we are presented to you by TrueNutrition.com. Our code is ADVICES, and here's the deal. You know, what's the number one supplement that we can all use more of? It's protein, right? So you can get some high-quality protein, A, from a source that you can trust, B, C, you can support our programming through doing that, and D, there's a ton of flavors, E, I don't know, I'm running out of things, but there's a lot more things. I'm sure if I wrote a list, I'd actually think about it, but seriously, TrueNutrition.com, they're a great company. You know, the people that put this company together, they did it because they believe in making high quality supplements and, you know, having these things available to bodybuilders. So they've been at it since I've been into serious bodybuilding and competing. I suggest their whey protein isolate to all my competitors. I mean, assuming that they can handle whey isolate, some people can't, you know, some people can't use dairy-based proteins. And in that case, they have other options. We have beef proteins for vegetarians or people who can't tolerate these things. We have other proteins too, like pea protein isolate, which is very low in carbs. I mean, they have a ton of options. So all sorts of specialty stuff, plus all of your basics. They have your health supplements too. You can get a good quality fish oil. You could get, you know, performance supplements as well. I mentioned it before. You know, I used their citrulline malate and their beta alanine to create my own intra and pre-workout blends. Guys, there are so many great supplements at True Nutrition. There really is something for everyone. And, you know, I have people ask all the time, like, how can I help to support ADVICES? Well, this is definitely one thing that you could do, is that you can get some great supplements from a company that you can trust while using our code. So it'll benefit you, it'll benefit True Nutrition, and it will benefit us in our programming. So guys, thanks for listening to the ad. I'm glad to hear that you're glad to have you here. And I hope you guys are doing well. Hope everybody's staying safe. Let's get through this thing. I feel like we're at the tail end now. So hang in there, hang tight. The end is in sight. All right, guys, let's get back to Dave.
We have a bunch of questions. I see we had a couple come in on our live feed. We'll get to those. We also had a bunch of questions over on our YouTube page, so I am going to turn to that today. Please stop calling me. Probably bill collectors. We don't need that. That's right you. Now, Dave.
That's you being very unprofessional.
Yes, it is. All right, so we have some stuff here. We had one question, YK11, heard about something called YK11. Have you tried it? I told him we'd talk about it. Dave, I have such limited experience with it. Somebody gave me a bottle of the stuff like when it first came out and got popular. I took it for 5 days and I started getting acne on my biceps, so I quit taking it. That was it.
It's a SARM. It's got a very prominent steroid background, which makes it quite a strong SARM, but as a result makes it quite suppressive. Beyond that, it's probably the, if you put SARMs here and you put steroids here, YK probably sits in the middle.
Yeah, it's like we're right there, I'd say, from what I've seen.
It's nigh on a full-blown steroid, but just not quite. From a point of view of effectiveness, yeah, you can get some good results off the back of it. But beware in mind that it is suppressive and you may need some PCT of some form post-usage. Mm. But out of the SARMs out there, it's probably one of the most powerful ones.
I've heard it compared to Anadrol.
Not sure if that's fair.
Okay.
But it's definitely got some oomph.
I've also heard of myostatin inhibition. I'm not sure about that.
Yeah, there is. But if you're talking about real world impact, don't bother.
Okay. This is another question we've had recently, specifically for you. I can't remember who had asked it. But is there such a thing as being able to inhibit myostatin effectively to the point where we'll see a difference? And if so, what works?
Right. There are myostatin inhibitors out there that work. They are research chemicals. They are incredibly expensive to get hold of. Mm. And as yet, there is not one that works properly. So The first thing you need to know about myostatin suppression is that it's a live drug. It's a bio drug. It's a living organism. Now, they're generally made by creating antibodies that are harvested from mice spleens, and then they grow.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so when you see freeze-dried powders as myostatin suppressants, their real-world effectiveness is not worth bothering with.
Okay.
Okay, the problem is with, there are so many different types of myostatin in the body, and as yet, research has failed to manage to just switch off the one that deals with muscular growth. So at the moment, what you tend to get is you'll get muscular growth if you can find someone who works in chemical research that can get you the drugs in the first place, and you can pay the thousands and thousands it's going to cost you to buy them.
Okay.
The problem is you're going to see some internal organ growth as well.
Yeah, we don't want that.
I have suspicions that that was one of the reasons Dallas autopsy read as it did.
With the enlarged organs, yeah.
Because he had everything enlarged, and it wasn't just enlarged, it was substantially enlarged.
So I think a lot of people are under the impression that growth hormone at a high dose is going to do that to you. You don't think
If that was the case, and every dwarf on the planet would be struggling with enlarged intestines and enlarged kidneys and enlarged livers and enlarged hearts and enlarged lungs, because that was the extent of Dallas's, wasn't it?
Yeah, you know, well, they're probably not using the doses that Dallas is, but that said, then every pro bodybuilder that's sized down, I talked about this with Wade Lightheart. He's a digestive specialist. And he said, you know, look at Dave Palumbo. Dave was known as, they even coined the term Palumboism. You know, people would say, oh, it was enlarged organs. I mean, at this point, Dave has sized down dramatically. And he's still in great shape. His torso is tight. You know, those organs, it's not as if he has these huge organs under there, you know?
No, I don't fall for that at all. There were some stories about people using broad spectrum inhibitors. So they were, you can get antibodies not too difficultly. Okay. And they were injecting the antibodies. And as a result, they were switching off huge swathes of myostatin throughout their body. They did grow. Effectively, what they did was make their own system, their own immune system attack myostatin.
Okay.
So as a result, they shut down their myostatin production. And they did grow. Muscularly, they grew very, very well. But the backside of that, they also died because of the organ enlargement and everything else that was going on inside them.
I think that, that extended gut thing, I think that that has to do in large part with the slower digestion. What do you think?
I think it's twofold. I think another issue with the extended gut is a lack of core control.
Sure. Oh, for sure. Especially, man, if you're eating all that food. I don't know about you, but for me, I let my stomach hang out when I'm bloated feeling. It's harder to like vacuum in.
Dorian used insulin to a great extent. He used growth hormone to a great extent, but I've seen an increase in the gut or the lack of gut control with the increase in machine dependency in training.
Oh.
So the old school deads and squats and overhead presses and standing overhead work have gone.
Yeah.
And as a result, there's a lack of core control. You look at Johnny Jackson, you look at Rhino. These are guys who are powerlifters and bodybuilders, use huge weight, should have thick cores, use the same amount of growth and insulin as everybody else.
Yeah.
But they have good core control because they've taught that in the powerlifting that they do.
Yeah.
So I think there's an element of that coming to it where we just don't have the old school core control that we used to have.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's also an element of huge carb up cycles pre-comp.
Sure.
Which is causing huge amounts of food to pass through the digestive tract, which again is causing the stomach to expand. But I don't fall for this growth hormone making huge guts. And when you see the strength of the core, you've got to think, how much pressure does there have to be behind that to push that out?
Oh, yeah, a lot. I could feel it, dude. If I've eaten like pizza or something like that, I don't care how lean I am, man. You feel that stomach pressing out? Yeah.
So I think it's more a combination of other things rather than anything to do with growth hormone.
And you know, too, though, and now, and I've heard other people talk about this. I've heard people talk about it from a scientific perspective, but things like insulin will delay gastric emptying. And then I've heard the same mm-hmm. thing about growth hormone. So if you're going to have yeah. a slower time getting rid of that food, you're going to have a longer time with more food in your gut. If you're trying to push calories to grow to, say, the size of a guy like William Bonick, the amount of muscle he packs on his body, his stomach isn't going to be completely flat and tight, you know? There's got to be a limit to the point where eventually to get bigger, you got to have enough food in your system, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think part of it is genetic, too, with how, say, how long someone's torso is versus you take a shorter guy, you know, with a shorter torso, it's going to pop out faster.
Yeah, I think there's all sorts of things running to play. And obviously, you know, you go back 15, 20 years and carb loads were very steady and not anything extra dramatic. Where now you've got guys trying to ram in 1,000 grams of carbs in 24 hours and more.
Yeah.
And using drugs to do so. And I think these are all the factors that produce this. Because at the end of the day, why is it the pros have managed in recent years to get their cores under much better control?
Sure.
So what have they done then? Have they managed to shrink their guts? How have they got their stomachs in control if it wasn't just a lack of control in the first place?
Yeah, if it was organ growth, they wouldn't be able to see a difference.
No, not at all.
All right, I'll move on here. We had, interesting. One comment we had from a guy named Craig. He says, on the note of construction, he's referring to that last episode we talked about. The guy asked if he's going to need to change his diet and training going to a construction job from a desk job. He said, I worked a construction job for 14 years, and I'm going to tell you now that you are going to need a hell of a lot more calories to grow. He said, I had to get around 6,500 calories to break 240 pounds. And he said, I did roofing with max effort for 8 hours a day. But on the flip side, you can get leaner on a larger amount of food than most, which is that's exactly what we both said. Training question here. Paul Harvey asks, have you got access to a gym or are you guys training at home or are you using this as a deload time? Everywhere is sold out of gym equipment apart from one place in the UK that's got a lot of stuff. Dave, I'm looking at Craigslist. I almost bought a set of dumbbells that go up to 125 pounds. I decided not to. I have enough equipment here. I can do everything I need to do. And if I want to move in a couple of years, I sure don't want to deal with those dumbbells. but I'm doing all right, man. And I mean, honestly, I haven't talked about it much, but I've been having some of my workouts suffer a little bit. Like chest is a little hard. I have the dumbbells that you put together, you know? So they're like on mm-hmm. the little post and then you use the little Allen wrench things. The problem is that because of my shoulder, I get issues with my bicep tendon and I need to be able to kick those dumbbells up into place and I can't balance them on my knee the same way when they get heavy enough. Plus my bench is real rickety and it wants to fall apart. So my bench press isn't as strong as it had been, but my back training is still great. Legs, I've got a squat rack. So I'm good to go. Dave, you're doing what? You said at the beginning of the show, you're walking your dog. That's your exercise right now, huh?
That's it.
That's it?
That's it.
Nice.
I don't have a weight in the house, and I've not trained at all. And I'm not bothered.
You're so focused on business nowadays, you know?
Well, it's not, take it or leave it. It is no longer a significant part of what I do on a day-to-day basis. I'm happy to train if I can, but if I can't, I can't. It's no big deal.
Yeah.
You know, I've sort of been there, done that, got the t-shirt, and I just, it's, I suppose it's burnt out of me a little bit. I don't know how you describe it. It isn't the priority it used to be.
Yeah. Let's see here. Here's a question that was on the feed, the live feed here. This is from Katie. Hello, would like to ask Dave's opinion on using GH 2 times a day, first thing in the morning and just before bed, one eye unit per injection for long-term use.
It all depends on how you cope with an AM shot. There's nothing wrong with an AM shot, but if you find it's knocking you out halfway through the day, then it's a bit pointless.
Yeah.
I don't cope well with growth hormone during the day. So if I do run it, I'll always run it PM.
Okay.
But it's down to individuals as to how well they cope with it. Is there any real benefit? I'll be honest, I've not seen much difference real world in splitting the dose to keeping it just PM.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like everybody's run it every way. And I am with you.
Yeah, the only thing I found advantageous to running it during the day was if I ran it pre-workout, I've got phenomenal pumps in the gym.
Okay.
But otherwise, I didn't see, apart from feeling tired, I didn't see much in the way of a benefit. Obviously, AM fasted, if you're going to fast for a period of time, then you're going to get an increase in fat loss. So it's advantageous there, but otherwise, if you're taking it more for a long-term well-being, sort of general health, youth-type treatment, then I don't really see much advantage splitting it or doing single dose. Just do what works best for you and then what fits in with your lifestyle and how you react to the drug.
Yeah, yeah, I think that that's probably – you know, I've heard Dusty Hanshaw had said the end of the day, just take it. Period. Like if you want it to work, you just, if as long as you take it, you know. And I remember talking to Justin Harris, and he was like, listen, Scott, you know, you've talked, you know, pros, you know, the way a lot of them are, like getting them off their Xbox to get to the gym when they're supposed to can be a challenge. Getting them to like split their growth hormone up into these very intricate timings and stuff. For a lot of those guys, you're lucky to just get them to take it once. So just get them to take it, period. And that's, you know, that's what they, that's what a lot of guys do. Let's see. I know we had a couple more here. There's some TRT guys. This is from Andy. He's commented on a lot of our stuff. Shout out to you, Andy, over at the YouTube page. There's some TRT guys that are doing test that's mixed with DMSO. Now, DMSO, that's a, it's basically a topical lotion that you can make drugs transfer transdermally. He says they're doing this and you've used daily via sublingual. Makes sense that they, Russia, would try the oral route, he says. So what do you think about TRT used to, I mean, really, Dave, I mean, I guess you could do use DMSO. I have no idea, well, though, man. What do you think?
It's, I mean, all you need to do is find a delivery system that works. So, you know, I mean, everything from the gel, if the gel can provide you with enough of the hormone into your system to put your levels where you need them to be, then it's fine. If this does the same, it's fine. If an injection does the same, it's fine. I don't understand this continuously trying to reinvent the wheel.
I think for the pharma companies, it's to make more money. Like, because they came out with Androgel, they're charging, you know, $500-$600. I don't know now, but they were in the past. They were charging a lot of money for a transdermal system, which could be patented, versus good old test sip. That patent ran out, you know, a long time ago.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, patents make them money, but I just, you know, for the layman, I don't understand why there's this obsession to try and reinvent the wheel.
Yeah.
If, you know, look at your peaks and troughs, look at your range, and adjust your injection frequency to keep yourself within the range you want to be. And I don't really see any more to it than that. And if you choose a sublingual route, or you choose a transdermal route, or you choose sub-Q over IM, doesn't matter as long as you're tracking your bloods and you're seeing where your peaks and troughs are in your range.
Yeah.
And you want those peaks and troughs to be minimal, and you want to try and ideally, from a health point of view, keep within range, because as soon as you go out of the top end, then you start creating issues.
Yeah.
Which may, I mean, I find the real sweet pot, I've tried every third day, 50 milligrams. I've tried 100, 125, 150 a week. I've tried 250 a fortnight. I've tried 250 every 3 weeks. And you know what? No difference. I feel no difference whatsoever on any of those injection protocols. I don't feel a change at all.
No kidding.
No. My bloods look different. but I don't feel any different whatsoever. In fact, at the moment, I have a bad habit of forgetting to take it.
And how are you doing with that? How often do you get it in?
As I do. I think the last time I took any was 50 milligrams a week and a half ago.
Okay.
Which reminds me, I need to do a shot. I completely forget. I just forget. And I don't feel much from it at all anyway at all. But, you know, it's pick a delivery system, fine-tune your frequency to get your ranges and your peaks and troughs where you want them to be, and then stick with it. Just don't stop fucking trying to change things.
And both of these delivery ideas, I mean, a topical test using DMSO, I mean, that is out there. You know, it's not revolutionary. That's kind of the number one thing I think that doctors are giving people nowadays, because I think that it's probably like you could give that to somebody, not have to teach them how to inject. I know that that's a popular thing, you know.
There is a move away from injection, I think, medically. I think for TRT treatment, they would much rather have you on some sort of topical than they would have you injecting.
And you know what, though? If you're going to make that at home, what about the cost? Because I know you're going to have to use a lot more hormone, right? I mean, those little packets to get more to absorb through your skin to get your levels up, it's going to be a lot more per day that you have to use versus, you know, 200 milligrams per week or whatever you're on, right?
Yeah, no, definitely. And like I say, I just look for the most efficient, most practical way that suits your lifestyle, and then just time it so you get your bloods in the right place. And it is that simple. Don't make it more fucking complex than it needs to be.
Yeah, yeah.
You are fucking guys adding different compounds and mixing different compounds, and you know, I'm doing this and I'm doing that, and I'm trying to be clever with it. And it's just like, look, you might feel wonderful now,
okay,
but you do 2-3 years of being out of range, and you'll start to see problems. You will start to see issues starting to arise, and then it's all going to be all woe is me. We should have thought of that when you were running on hyperpower for the last 3 years, thinking that at some point it's gonna, you know, not gonna catch up with you, because it will do.
Yeah.
You know, that old economic saying, there's no free school meals, is true.
Let's see here. See if we have anything else. I know we have one more question from YouTube. Checking to make sure. Yep, I don't see anything else on the live feed right now. If anybody else has any last minute questions, feel free to throw them in there. Question from CW over at the YouTube page. He says, let's see. Don't fall asleep on us, Dave.
I'm joining like hell. That's that walk. It's killed me.
Did you take some growth hormone today?
No.
Okay. Just checking. I'd like to know what Dave's outlook is about the legality of steroids in the UK, as well as in the rest of Europe. And how will it be? Will it stay the way it is? Or will it possibly become more like the States, or even more liberal, kind of like the way it's over the counter out in Thailand? Where do you think we're going here, Dave?
Now, funny you should mention this, because I had a very long conversation with an academic researcher this morning, an old friend of mine called Martin Chandler. Now, generally speaking, drug policy in the UK is very much influenced by the ACMD, the Advisory Council for Misuse of Drugs.
Okay.
I do present, I'm one of their, what they call, evidence gatherers. So I do present to them findings about, you know, what's going on in the world of steroid use and stuff like this. They don't sit very often, maybe once a year.
Okay.
Now they sat last year and nothing really came of it. And I was quite surprised. There was very little media coverage when there's usually quite a big piece of media coverage about it. And it all seemed a bit of a non-event. And I wasn't sure why. And I haven't had much to do with the academia side of things for a while, because generally they frustrate me. Not all academics, but I find a lot of academics very out of touch, very just a waste of time. Anyway, I've known Martin a lot of years. He is partly responsible for getting me doing what I currently do.
Really?
Yes.
We should have him on the show. He's the guy that makes chocolates too, right?
Yeah, he worked for John Moore University Hospital, and he interviewed me for a research program they were doing on steroid use. Hmm. He then asked me. He said he thought I would be really good at doing what he did.
Okay.
So he then asked me a few weeks later. He asked me to co-present a radio show interview with him, and then I spoke at several conferences. And that's one of those conferences was what got me starting to do the court work. So I suppose in a way I owe a lot of my corporate side of stuff to Martin. Hmm. He was the first person that set me on that path. Now, Martin left Liverpool University and went into doing just purely court work. And then he was running a cafe at a rock climbing place for some reason. Hmm. He's a big rock climber, he's an avid rock climber. Anyway, I hadn't heard anything, and I was speaking to a colleague the other day who said that his name had come up in a lot of court work, and he was now based at Birmingham University. And I was like, oh, I thought he'd retired from doing court work. So I messaged him to see how he was doing, and he says, yeah, he's now based at uni, Birmingham Uni. He's doing his PhD. He's involved in a steroid research sort of group thing there. And he's working with UKAD. Now, UKAD is UK Anti-Doping. So UK Anti-Doping of an organization are an absolute sack of fucking donkey ball sucking morons.
Would you say the C word? I know we talked about this before. No. The show. Still not that very bad.
Close.
Okay.
Close.
Okay.
I had a stand-up slagging match, Niley, with their chairwoman at a new televised debate on steroid use.
That's another British term, slagging. I like that.
Yes. We basically had an argument on live TV. She's an idiot. An absolute moron. What was more... what was annoying was she has no subject knowledge whatsoever, but was trying to act like she did.
Can we get a copy of that? I want to replay that here.
It was some Sunday morning talk show. They filmed it in a school in Manchester.
Huh.
Anyway, long story short, we got talking. I went on a bit of a rant about academics and harm reduction being fucking useless.
Yeah.
And to a large part, Martin agrees. He knows how frustrated I am about the way things are. But he informed me that the government had basically said to UKD, here you are, you deal with the steroid problem. Okay, so I'm going to get up the conversation. So, as far as this is what he said to me, as far as I know, it goes something like this. Someone in government, we need to do something about iPad use. Possibly we have no idea what to do. Someone sensible, harm reduction services are doing it already. Government, but there's issues there and it costs us money. Dickheads who walk into next and expect to be able to clear a shelf of stock because you give it to dirty smackheads, so why not us? Limits are not a strong point with all this client group after all. Government, we have no idea what to do. These doping people deal with this sort of thing. Task it with them. So UKAD. Okay, but we just ban it, and that's already been highlighted as the wrong response. We don't know what to do either.
Hmm.
So basically, the UKAD have already tried on several occasions to influence the complete banning of steroids in the UK. As soon as they suggest legislation changes, ACMD get involved, and ACMD have twice turned around and said, fuck off, we're not changing the law.
Hmm.
So we have this situation at the moment where the people that are supposed to be heading up the war on steroids in the UK are complete, utter retards that don't know their ass from their elbow and come from a very much all steroids are bad. You're a cheat if you use steroids, and we're out to get you background.
That's basically that where the U.S. comes from, I think. All our law.
Yeah. Now, that's been heavily, heavily tempered by Birmingham University and Martin's involvement particularly. And the problem is that they know they can't change the law because they have to go through the ACMD. And the ACMD on two occasions have resoutedly turned around and said, we ain't changing the law. The police have turned around and said, we don't want the law changing.
Hmm.
So as it stands, I find it highly unlikely that there will be any change in steroid law in the UK, excuse me. You know, laws get created for several reasons. Obviously, one is to protect idiots from themselves. But another one is political pressure.
Sure.
And if there's a significant enough outcry from the public about the dangers of steroid use, then what you'll see is it becomes a political factor, not a health factor or a criminal factor, and that could see changes in legislation.
Yeah.
If it becomes such an issue that it becomes actually votable on and starts to become part of a political party's manifesto, then you'll see changes. But I doubt it ever getting that strong. It's possible. We have seen it with other drugs. I think the most likelihood is that if they want any changes, what they'll do is they'll increase enforcement of the current law and probably leave it at that.
Yeah. Yeah, that about wraps us up here, Dave. I don't think we have any other questions. Oh, there was another comment about I think so many people are in the boat where they can relate to like the blue collar work thing. So we had a few comments about that. And then Dan Smith over at YouTube also mentioned Sergio Oliva worked a 12 hour shifts at a foundry, and he did 3 to 4 hour workouts a night. I believe that he ate what he wanted and he drank liters of Coke and never dieted for a comp until his comeback in the 80s. But that's also Sergio Oliva, you know, so there's that.
Legend. Yes. Absolute legend.
Yes. Dave,
to me, he's a bigger legend than Arnold.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You like Sergio?
Love him. Absolutely love him. That picture with that pull cue is just...
That's a classic. So you've got COVID tests.
Yes. And before everyone starts screaming, the fake, the this, the that, let me just explain the scenario. My brother's a paramedic. Most of my family's medical. We have EVAL, which is a medical blood testing company. And as part of that, we work with other blood testing companies. So, you know, I have a relationship with Medichex, a private medical youth who visited over here. And we do a lot of things together. And we were talking, it'd be nice if we could somehow get a COVID blood test sorted. Main reason was, one, to provide a service that people had actually been asking for, and two, to be quite honest, just to try and financially survive this shit.
Yeah.
Anyway, lots and lots of research later, we came up with the HealGen test, which is produced by HealGen based in Houston, Texas.
Okay.
HealGen is owned by a company based in Singapore. Now, this test recently got FDA emergency approval. The downside of that emergency approval is that they have to hold on their website that this test is not approved by the FDA, which doesn't make fucking sense. But basically what the FDA said, well, we will take your research as being gospel. And on the base of that, we'll grant approval for this drug. But because we haven't independently tested it, you cannot say it's got full FDA approval, only that it's got emergency approval. So that was the first test we were able to source. Still very difficult to get hold of, and delivery times are taking anything from 1 to 4 weeks.
Okay.
So we started selling that one out, got a bit of flack for it, which I understand. It's stressful times and people are worried. And we tried to make it as cost effective as we could. So it's £29 is what we sell it at. We then got wind of the WANDFO test, which is the test that the British government bought that they're going to use on frontline staff. And they're also going to make available through pharmacists and Amazon in the UK.
Okay.
Now, there's a Dutch distributor for this test. Now, this test has got CE certification, so it's got conformity. And this test has got conformity that it tests for the antibodies, so you know you've been exposed to the virus and you now have immunity.
Oh.
So obviously because of that, this test is more expensive.
Hmm.
Now technically, as it currently stands, there is no test available in the UK that is approved for home use, and this is the very key element of this. These tests are approved for professional use.
Yeah.
So we can legally buy these tests and then we can go to somebody's house, deliver this test. That's perfectly legal. And that test is approved and a CE conformity to do that. The same test, however, if I post it to you, then becomes non-CE conform.
Sure, I could see that.
Because you're now doing it. Literally what you do is put a drop of blood in one hole and two drops of a buffer liquid in another hole.
Yeah.
That's all you do. It's like a pregnancy test. It's so easy to do, perfectly viable to do at home.
Yeah.
But because they were never passed by the CE to be used in a home environment, they were only passed as efficiency as a test. It technically is a gray area when it comes to us then sending them out. But obviously, how are we supposed to self-isolate and how are we supposed to restrict our movements to spread of the disease if we're turning up at people's houses and delivering the test? Because we can't get PPE. We can't get masks.
Yeah.
Sale of masks to private individuals banned nearly 2 months ago in this country. All our suppliers told us 2 months ago, you will not be able to buy face masks off us.
You're kidding.
Everything has been reserved for the NHS. So we decided we'd send them out. So the tests are backed up by plenty of data. They've got CE conformity. However, that conformity only covers them as a test if I do the test on you. It doesn't come for them if you do the test on yourself. But the test is so easy to do. It's the same frigging test. It does the same fucking thing. The difference is that you fingerprint yourself and drop a little blood in it instead of me fingerprinting you and putting a drop of blood in it.
Yeah.
That is literally the only difference. So, yeah, we've been what we're doing is we are literally, and you can believe this if you want or not, I don't really give a shit. I don't mean you. I mean people listening.
Oh, I'm not going to believe you. I already made up my mind.
Oh, you can fuck off, you. I don't like you anyway. Damn Yank.
See you next Thursday, Dave.
Yeah, Thursday now, is it? Not Tuesday.
Tuesday? See you next Tuesday, Dave.
Yes, you will. You will see me next Tuesday. So what we've done is we've quite literally, as soon as we hit the cost of the test to cover that, and we make enough money to cover our bills, anything extra, we are now donating to the local hospital. So I went up yesterday and gave the local hospital £1,000 worth of tests.
No kidding.
And I'll do the same again next week or the week after when we get to the point where we've made enough money to be able to do that.
Well, that's cool, man.
All we want to do is get through this. And I understand people's concerns about profiteering, and I'm not a fan of it myself.
Yeah.
And though I'm not ashamed to make money, this I don't think is the time to make money. But at the same time, I have a family, I have bills, I have overheads, and I just want to survive this. So
I support you, Dave. I believe
we're just doing it. We're doing enough to pay his bills, and then anything extra, like I say, is going back into the NHS, because I think that's only fair. Yeah. I don't, however, think we'll be able to do this for much longer. I think they'll tell us that we can only sell to business soon.
Okay.
So then we'll only be able to sell them in blocks of five or blocks of 10 or whatever it is.
Mm. All right. Well, hey, let's get out of here, Dave. If anybody wants to reach out to Dave about these tests, go to crosslands.org.uk. Reach out to him. No, don't go there.
Go to eval.
What is it?
www.evalbloodanalysis.com.
Okay. Eval. Okay. We'll have that in the show notes, too, in case anybody's interested, if this is still happening next week when we get the episode out. Of course, everybody who's watching live, you can get to them now. All right, guys, for another episode of Drugs and Stuff with Dave Crossland, I'm Scott McNally. We will see you soon.